Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk TV Live. I'm your host, Barbara Barnett. I'm executive editor of Blog Critics Magazine. I almost forgot that for a moment. Oh my gosh. I'm executive editor of Blog Critics Magazine, where I also serve as the film and TV editor. And I am joined tonight by Jimmy, Jerome Wessel. Hello. TV, who also writes for Blog Critics. Yes. He covers many things for us, including Doctor Who and Glee. And a lot of British TV. You do a lot of British TV reviews for us. Which
A lot of my Blog Critics articles are. And you know, this is the big Doctor Who week.
You know, I'm going. Did you know that?
You're going to what?
To the big Fathom Events thing.
Oh, cool.
I got comped. So I'm really excited about that. On the 24th. Okay. On the 24th, so I'm going to that. So that'll be really cool. So you do a lot of Doctor Who stuff for us. And we're also joined tonight, and you also write for Seat 42F and for Big Bad and Geeky and Examiner. Do you still write for Examiner?
No.
I'm so glad you don't write. What?
The Good, the Bad, and the Geeky.
The Good, the Bad, and the Geeky. Yeah, I've been on your show a few times. I still can't get the name right. And I'm glad you don't write for Examiner anymore. They're like really poor competition.
Oh, they're horrible. So horrible.
Much better to read Blog Critics because we do a better job.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yes, we have an editor. Classy operation. And we've just started adding a news feature. So if you guys want the latest news on all TV and music and movies, we are going to be starting to, we've already started to promo sneak peeks and new press releases that come out from the networks and studios and the record labels. And we're going to be doing like short little tidbits every day. So we'll be keeping you on the edge. It's kind of a new thing for us because we generally tend to go for like the 300-word insightful reviews and commentaries and a little bit more upper crust kind of stuff. But you know what? We also want to do some news, so we've decided to do that. So we're excited to be doing that. Right now, you guys can't do it. Only editors can do that. But we'll be opening it up to everyone at some time. So anyway, and we are also joined tonight by Our Heart Chrissy, Our Heart Radio, who does write for The Examiner.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chrissy. I was just bad mouthing them.
That's okay. My writing, I'm just starting out, so it's okay. But, you know.
Oh, it's a great thing to start on. They just treat you bad.
It is. And yeah. See, we treat you nice. We treat you nice. We treat people nice. And we have great editors. And we have great executive editors. Patting myself on the back here. John Sobel and I on the show. And we're owned. And I would be remiss in not saying that we are owned. Our corporate parent is Technorati Media, the big, gigantic,
megalomania
company. I think they're like the fourth largest internet company in the country, but they own us.
That's funny.
Wow.
That's cool. They pay my salary, which is nice. Thank you guys. Which makes shows like this possible. And they don't pay for this show, so never mind Technorati. Anyway. And we are sponsored, speaking of which, we are sponsored tonight by Wireless One, which does the greatest apps for you for any purpose at all. And you can find them on letstalktv.barbarabarnett.com right on the front page. And we are also sponsored tonight by the book Chasing Zebras, The Unofficial Guide to House MD, available on Amazon.com and everywhere else. And I've added a new sponsor because I have a new book.
Yay.
It's called Still Hungry for Your Love, Further Adventures in Zombie Romance. And it's edited by Lori Perkins, and I have a story in it called The Z-Spot, which is a story of zombie love therapy. And so I'm really excited. It was out in ebook, and now it just came out in print.
Cool.
So I got my copy, and I'm so excited because I saw it, like, you know, oh, it's in print now. It's a real book. So very excited to see it. And that
it's
is also
a real book now.
It's a real book. It's not just an ebook. So it's available. It's available everywhere. It's available at Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com, and it's available everywhere. So pick that up if you want to read my fiction, which is now I'm a, as my agent calls me, a published fictionista. I have made the cross over the divide. So we have a fantastic show tonight. I mean, really fantastic show.
I'm very excited.
I have to say, last night's Once Upon a Time is really rivaling Skin Deep for my favorite episode. It was so well done and so well written and so well performed. And it, like the best Once Upon a Time episodes, it involved everyone. It involved everyone in the main cast in one way or the other. It was mostly Rumpel's story. But... Mm-hmm. Like, most of the stories in his arc, they involve kind of everyone else in one way or another. There's nobody that's, like, not in it. I mean,
well,
obviously...
he more than everyone is connected to every character, you know? Because
he
kind of was
the
go-to person.
Yeah, he is connected to all the characters, which is kind of cool. Obviously, Belle wasn't in it. But it was really... I thought it was just... I started my review. I wrote my review. It's funny because I wasn't going to post my review till today. We have big storms. We are about 75 miles north of where those great big tornadoes hit yesterday.
So awful.
Mm-hmm. I know. In fact, my son called me. He says, "Mom, the tornado struck right by where I was at school last year." Because
he's
where a lot of his friends still are. He went to University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And he says, yeah, there was a tornado that touched down like 15 miles from the university. And so they were all a little nervous and the power went out. And he lives in Athens, Georgia now, so he doesn't live now. But it was really kind of spooky. Anyway, so they were covering it on our local ABC station. And 6:59 came on, 6:50, 7 o'clock came on. They were still covering it. But now what got me really upset, and normally I kind of groove on the disaster coverage because I'm sort of a, you know, like I'm really interested in that stuff, especially weather stuff, because I'm sort of a climate change, like I really follow that. I really follow weather stuff. But they started talking about the Bears game. And I was like, wait a second. Okay, it's one thing if you want to give emergency numbers and you want to talk about the Red Cross. But come on, you're talking about the freaking Bears. Give me a break. So I started tweeting them about 7:05. And I was like, oh, come on, guys. You're just repeating yourself. And now you're not even talking about the storm. You're talking about the Bears. You have your sports guy there. Come on. So I was really kvetching about it. That's a Yiddish word for complaining. And I finally, at 7:24, they started the Once Upon a Time feed. Yay. So I watched it starting at 7:24 to the end, and I was going to wait until I saw the whole thing before I wrote my review, but I really, really, really loved this episode. So I couldn't contain myself. I wrote the review, and I started the review with the word, I never do this. I started the review with the word wow. And what I said
is appropriate.
I really did. I thought it was really appropriate, and I just want to read like the first paragraph, if I might. And by the way, David Goodman, the exciting part is not my review or not the episode itself even, which was great, but the fact is that David Goodman, who wrote last night's episode, will be joining us in about 20 minutes, which is really, really exciting. So I'm going to interview him. I've got a ton of questions for him. I've gotten a bunch of questions from on Twitter today, Twitter feed. People have been tweeting me questions all day. And I know that, Chrissy, you have questions, and people in the chat room have questions. So if you guys want to type questions in, Jimmy and Chrissy, if you want to chime in with questions, that's great as well.
Okay.
But when he comes on, but I'm going to take a few minutes myself, and I'll be cognizant of the time. But this is what how I started my review. Wow. It's been a long time since I've said that about a Once Upon a Time episode, so it bears repeating. Wow. Such a packed hour, complete with emotional sucker punch. Several, actually. And reveals and surprises. Think Lovely Thoughts was as close to a perfect Once Upon a Time episode as I can imagine. And then I put my caveat about having missed the first 25 minutes. While our intrepid heroes battle the real villain in the evil Peter Pan, they continue to battle their own internal battles, whether to overcome traumas present since a long past childhood, or to possess a self-belief needed to prevail, or to persuade others to believe in them. And it was all beautifully done. Kudos to David Goodman and Robert Hull for a wonderfully rendered script, deeply layered and giving all our main characters their moments. I really, really loved the episode. Can you tell?
I don't know if you liked it enough, though.
This is the one you have the writer coming on for, because if this had been like one of the really bad episodes, it'd be a little awkward.
I know. What would we have done?
I've actually had tremendous success with this, because I've had Jane on. I mean, I had her on for Skin Deep.
Well, Jane's always good. That's a given. You can have Jane on without any worry at all.
Well, but you know what? I've been a fan of David Goodman's because I've liked his Once Upon a Time episodes. And since Jane is in I think part of it is that Jane is working on Once Upon a Time in Wonderland now as well.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not necessarily going to be writing as many episodes. So I think David has become sort of the go-to guy for Rumpel.
Well, look at some of the other episodes he's written. I mean, he did Crocodile.
And Nasty Habits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's done some good stuff.
Yeah. So he's done some really good stuff. He's a really terrific writer. He really knows how to layer things in. He's a lot in Jane's mold as far as, he's in his own right. He's a great writer. But he, like Jane, knows how to really layer things in and really not make things as black and white as they might seem. So, were you guys surprised with the reveal of Peter Pan being Rumpel's father?
I was.
How many of you guys in the chat room were surprised?
I was shocked.
Well, I was surprised and I wasn't. Like I was telling you guys before the show, I really saw it coming from the moment we first saw Rumpel's father and he was doing the games. But at the same time, even though I like thought I had it figured out, I kept telling myself, I'm wrong. There's no way. And so when they did the reveal, I was still surprised, even though I'd thought about it earlier in the hour.
See, and I missed
that.
Yeah,
I hadn't thought of it.
I didn't see the first 25 minutes till this morning. So I went and bought it.
Barbara, you and I, we spoke right after the show because you were like,
I know.
Did you see it? I'm like, yeah, I was just freaking out. It was such an unexpected twist. That's the thing.
Yeah.
In everything that has happened in the craziness of Once Upon a Time, never did that even enter my mind.
Yeah.
And I come up with all kinds of crazy, we talk about crazy theories.
Right. And we've been trying to figure out how Rumpel and Pan were connected because they're all.
Yeah.
It's
since you watched the end first, and then went back. Did you see those hints laid down early in the episode?
I did. It just really, it was really, really well done. I really thought that, you know, talk about worst parent of the year. Holy smokes.
Well, no wonder.
I mean,
it's interesting to me. I thought about this after the fact. But, you know, a lot of times in other Peter Pan things, they refer to him as the boy that never grew up. And Once Upon a Time hasn't hammered that at all. They haven't really used that phrase. And Now it makes total sense. Why not? Because he wasn't a boy. He did grow up. And so,
he did.
I don't know. That, to me, just was like, oh, that's why they never called him that all season.
So I have a question for you guys, and I'm going to ask this of David as well. So the boy will be his undoing.
Mm-hmm.
Is the boy Henry or is the boy Pan?
The latter, actually, now that you're saying that.
Uh-huh.
That's a great question.
Was.
But wasn't there more to that? Wasn't it the boy that would lead into something? Wait, I'm trying to remember what that whole thing was.
Well, they showed it in the beginning of the show, and would you know, I can't even think of what it was. It was basically, it was like, no, it was your actions on the battlefield.
Your son's fatherless.
That will lead to the boy being your,
you will be reunited with your son. And I can't remember the rest.
But it was like, but the boy will be your undoing. But
yeah.
It could be. Well, that's the other thing is, how do we know the boy, he's not talking about his son, Bay?
Well, I was pretty sure there was something in the prophecy that led him to believe it was Henry before this that referred to something Henry's already done.
Yeah, it could be.
I can't remember.
Or maybe it's just interpretation. It's just like interpreting the word undoing, which, by the way, I'm also going to ask David about a definitional question. Undoing means a lot of different things. And does undoing mean death? And obviously they're getting around that by using Pandora's box. And Rumpel's not dead. Clearly Rumpel's not dead. In the box, and God only knows how he'll come out of that. Now, that's really interesting, too, because he's in this box, right? And all of the evil of the world is in this box. And what happens to the evil, to the dark side of Rumpel when he's in there?
What I'm thinking is maybe he comes out and he's not the dark one anymore.
I think that's his undoing.
Or maybe he's more of a dark one because he had to. When he's in a spot of pure evil, you know, he may need that darkness to survive.
Or maybe it's stripped from him. Because he's really, you know, I think that this thing in Neverland has been such an unbelievable journey for him, which, I said from the beginning, and Adam and Eddie said this to me at Comic-Con, and Robert did as well. Said that this first half of the season for Rumpel is going to be, this is really Rumpel's story. This is a real journey for him and into his heart of darkness. And it really has been. I mean, they really delivered on that. And I thought it was really good. But I loved the fact that he went along with helping Charming with no payoff. He really wants everyone to believe in him. He really wants that.
Well, he's definitely broke that trend that, you know, we were talking about his family and, you know, what his father did and what his father's father did.
He's broken that cycle.
The one that broke the trend.
Yep, he broke the cycle because he let go. It was a terrible, terrible, and I love that confrontation. I am nothing like you. You know, I am nothing like you. I let go his hand, and I have regretted that since the moment that happened. I've spent my whole life looking for my son. And what did you do?
Do you think we're going to learn that those ants had more influence on him than even we've seen so far? That maybe that's, you know, part of
that's where the goodness
ended up
that's
being
where, okay? Yeah, maybe that's where the goodness in him comes. You know, where does that
two star great ants? The two Stargate ants.
Yeah, the yes, one from, what is she, was she an SG? Well, you know, the one, Glynis Davies.
One was Atlantis and one was Universe.
Yeah, Glynis Davies, this is the weird, interesting little connection. So Glynis Davies was in Stargate Universe, which, of course, hopefully you all in my audience know, or maybe you don't, was Robert Carlyle's last series. He was the star of that show. And interestingly enough, she played Eli Wallace's mother, played by David Blue, Eli's mom. And there was an episode in the second season called Pathogen, which was really her episode. It was hers and Eli's episode. And Robert Carlyle directed it, and he directed her. She was really the main guest star in the episode. And so he directed her. And I think that's so cool that she plays young Rumple's spinster aunt. I just love that. So she was a really great – I really liked her. She was a really great character.
Wonder if Carlyle had some hand in that casting.
You know, a lot of the shows that film in Vancouver, and actually Once Upon a Time isn't one of them, but a lot of the shows in Vancouver, there's a huge, huge pool of talent in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Stargate Universe actors turn up on things like Supernatural. Like Elena Hoffman mm-hmm. has been on Supernatural.
Smallville.
So a lot of those guys have been on a lot of those Canadian shows. What Once Upon a Time tends to do is import British actors.
Yeah.
Lots of British actors, which is kind of cool because I don't think they need like a work visa to work in Canada. They would to work in the U.S., but not to work in mm-hmm. Canada. So, you know, it's easy to bring actors in from Canada, so which is easy for the actors as well as the studio because they're not working in the U.S. They're working in part of the Commonwealth. So so that's kind of cool. So I thought that was really good. I love the ants, by the way. I thought that added a lot of really nice lightness to the episode.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I really like them, and I love the fact that he can spin. You know, that's
yeah,
where he got
wasn't
his
it
love.
Great?
And that's what, and you know, also you know this when he feels stressed, right? When Mr. Gold feels stressed,
yep.
Rumple
yeah,
feels. What
he
does he do? What does he do?
He
spins.
Yeah.
He spins.
Exactly.
Because it and in Skin Deep, he spins. Why do you spin? Because it helps me to forget.
Yeah, no, this episode did a good job of tying into so many other elements of the personality that have been established.
It really did. I just, again, I cannot say enough about this episode. It has renewed my delight with the show. I thought this season has been really good. I really liked this season. There hasn't mm-hmm. been any one episode that has just gobsmacked me. I think that's the right term.
There's only
it's
been one
like,
episode that I thought was terrible. But, yeah, there hasn't been any that have been awesome until now.
No. Yeah, just like it was like sort of like House in the last couple seasons. It was like, mm-hmm. yeah, I like it, but there wasn't one that left me breathless during the commercial breaks. This one left me breathless during the commercial breaks. It was like, come on, can't I fast forward? It really, really, really left me staggered at how really wonderful it was. And I thought the acting was, a young boy will lead you to your son, the boy will be your undoing. Since
yeah. I guess those two sentences could be unrelated, but they seem to be related.
A young boy will lead you to your son. Yeah, well, that's true. Okay, so I guess it is Henry. So
unless the two sentences aren't meant to have anything to do with one another, which is possible.
Yeah, it's very possible because that seer was kind of slippery.
Mm-hmm.
Was she not? Right? A young boy
yeah,
will lead
absolutely.
You to your son. The boy will be your undoing. That could be two unrelated sentences.
Yep. It could be.
they could. So I'm really excited about next week's 2 weeks episode, because next week there is no
episode.
Should you guys want to hear what the press release says for 2 weeks from last night?
Yeah, that'd be great.
It's called the episode's called Save Henry. While Henry's life hangs in the balance, the race is on to stop Pan from gaining full magical powers from the heart of the truest believer. Meanwhile, in Storybrooke of the past, Regina decides to fill a void in her life and, with Mr. Gold's help, sets out to adopt a baby.
Finally. That's what I've been waiting for.
So, Samantha says in the chat room, I went back and watched Nasty Habits, knowing that Peter was Rumpel's father. Incredibly cruel. Oh, there is no doubt in my mind that Rumpel's father takes the crown of worst parent in the world from Cora.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was going to be possible for someone being heartless, and cruel beyond belief. But what a point. It was just so much poignant in that episode. I'm sort of kind of got my eye on the queue here. I'm waiting for David. I know the number he's calling from, so I'm kind of keeping an eye here. One of the things that really struck me, again, the performances were so good. Robbie Kay never ceases to amaze me.
I know. Isn't he wonderful?
What fabulous cat.
That kid, I really think that he is the next Johnny Depp. I mean, he really is. He is, the kid is so, the thing with him is that it's so natural. He's a little bit like Robert Carlyle in that, because with Robert Carlyle, everything just comes naturally to him, and that's my feeling with Robbie. I mean, you know, you didn't see that movie that I saw him in, but I'm telling you, I mean, even at the age of, I think he was 13 when he did that movie, it was just, you know, he just, and the people that, the director that I talked to on that show, on that movie, said that he was just so taken with him, and that the way he relates to the actors surrounding him is just, he's got a gift, you know, a real gift for it.
And yeah, there's a real naturalism.
Incredible.
There's a naturalism and a grace to his performance, and his scenes last night with Robert, were just, they just sizzled.
Totally bought what he was telling Henry. I mean, he sold that scene. You could see why Henry would be divided on what the truth was.
Totally.
Oh yeah.
Even
there's
with
so
his
much
parents being the other side of it.
Yep, and the intensity. Wow. Wow,
yeah.
Coming from
was,
a young
was,
actor.
Yep, it was incredible.
He makes a great villain. I love the fact that they matched Rumpel's father's eyes with Peter Pan's blue eyes.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting that they were able to
I was
do
like,
that.
Wow,
really.
They made him blue-eyed, just like Peter Pan, of course.
Yeah, of course.
How cool is that? And I mean, just how sad is Rumpel's story that he is really a traumatized child. He is a traumatized, mm-hmm. battered, neglected, abandoned child. And the fact that Peter Pan kept taunting him with it. Wow. The thing that I don't understand, I am going to ask David about it, and I'm hoping he calls in. I don't see him yet. I hope they remembered, and I hope he remembered. I don't know if Robbie Kay always had blue eyes. I'm just thinking, I'm hoping I sent them the phone number. Yeah, I did. I sent them the phone number because they sent their phone number back. I don't remember where I was going now because I was like thinking about David and why he hasn't, you know, he's not called in yet. But that's okay. We still got 11 seconds till he's supposed to be here. he'll call in. I'm sure he'll call in. If not, we can just keep talking and we'll have him on another time. But I thought that, where was I going? Oh my gosh, I got totally sidetracked.
Blue eyes, and that the, and that Pan was,
yeah,
and had blue eyes, and then so did his father have blue eyes.
Yeah, I love that. I really, by the way, yeah. I love Stephen Lord did a great job as well.
Yeah, he did, I have to say. I mean, and so did little Wyatt. Wyatt that played,
Wyatt Olaf.
He was, let me tell you, that kid with the, he had the accent
okay,
down.
All right.
You know
what,
which
I
was
think
incredible.
We have David. Hang on a second. I think we have David.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, is this David?
It is.
Hi, David. How are you? This is Barbara.
Hey, Barbara. How's it going?
I am good. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much.
I have two other people that are here with me live, and that's
okay.
James Daly and Christine Piccolo, who both write for Blog Critics, and they're on my regular Once Upon a Time panel. First of all, wow. That's exactly how I never, ever, ever start a review, and I was telling my audience earlier, I never, ever start a TV review with wow. But I did last night for the very first time, and I said it twice.
Yay! I read it,
by
the way.
Did you really? Oh, I'm
the
so
review?
Glad.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, well, that's so nice. It was fabulous. It's been a while since I've seen any TV show that literally had me holding my breath through the commercial breaks.
So happy to hear that.
And I think that I am not the only one that feels that way. I think every single fan that I have talked with, even people who've been critical of this season in one way or another,
yeah, sure.
Loved this episode. So that I needed to get that out of the way. And I think my panelists would agree with me. We've just been talking about how wonderful the episode was for the last half hour. So,
excellent.
Congratulations.
oh, thank you so much.
So, wow, talk about Rumpel having the worst parent of the year.
Well, I know if anyone should, he should, right? I mean, knowing what he's done and where he's come from.
Yeah, man, talk about a traumatized child.
Yes, and I think, hopefully for a lot of people, I mean, I think, something that the show has done well is making its villains giving context to why they do what they do. And I think for three seasons, we've kind of, we've understood him more than you would understand a lot of villains on a lot of different shows. But certainly for we kind of gave the final word or the sort of the original sin that kind of, I think, puts everything he's done in context. And I think I think you understood his struggle to do the right thing and how he didn't do the right thing with Balefire. But now, boy, you know where he came from. and how that has been a cycle he's been trying to break this season.
Yeah, and he has. I loved, by the way, the confrontation between Rumpel and Pan in the cave was Shakespearean. It was amazing.
I'm so glad. And didn't Robbie Kay just slay that? I mean, we know obviously Bobby Carlyle is amazing, but didn't Robbie just stand sort of toe to toe with him?
Oh yeah, we've just been talking about that as to how naturalistic and what a gracefulness Robbie Kay has, and not unlike Robert Carlyle. I think they're very much of the same mold, and for him to be able to play Rumpel's father, and by the way, that puts, I mean, what happens last night, and it puts everything, every conversation that he and Peter Pan have had into a completely new context.
Sure.
So now everybody has to go and watch all those episodes again.
And by the way, I will tell them to do that and know that none of those every one of those conversations was written with this reveal in mind. I mean, some revelations you fall into and you say, hey, wouldn't it be, four episodes later, you say, hey, wouldn't it be great if we didn't know this, that, or the other thing? But this, from the beginning of season three, we knew, you know, who Pan was and everything from. And it's very funny because when you and I did the interview call on episode four,
yeah.
Which is sort of the precursor to this episode, mm-hmm. You know, there are many things in that episode, including the use of the word laddie, the way that that Pan calls Rumple that in that episode, and then it's reprised here, and you understand that that's something that his father always said, things like that that have been planned out, you know, since the season began.
Oh, yeah, brilliantly done. So that actually answers a question that a couple of my listeners, my readers, had was, did you have all of the episodes leading up to this were written with this in mind? In fact, somebody in the chat room saying, that answers my question. Yay.
Yes. No, and from, you know, from the moment that the doll, the Cornhusk doll, is given to Rumple by Felix in the premiere, you know, we knew we didn't know exactly. I mean, some of the specifics we had yet to figure out, but that was the beginning of that arc.
Cool. That just great. There's clearly more to explore in Rumple's character, but you've really mined him. What
yeah.
else is there to learn? Or is he going to be gone forever in that little box? Hopefully not.
I suspect if you think long and hard about it, you can answer that question.
I suspect that he's not going to be in that box forever.
His story is not yet done.
No, and I hope it never gets done until, you know, years from now when the show goes off the air, because it's definitely a great story. So next episode, we're going to be learning more about how Henry happened to come to Storybrooke. I happened
Correct.
To get the press release today from ABC, so that was always nice to have. It's always nice to have.
Sure.
And you guys are just giving away so much in the way of – not giving away. You're not
giving
away spoilers.
Yeah, I get it.
But you're really making a lot of reveals this season. Origin stories. Now we're going to see Henry's origin story. Where do you go from there? You know, where do you go from now to the second half of season three?
Oh, well, I mean, I think we – the air order for this year was very intentionally put into doing kind of a first – group of episodes running almost interrupted. The only interruption is the one that that people are going to feel in the next couple weeks.
Yeah.
But then running straight after that through to episode 11, and then the second group being 12 through 22, starting in the spring. And we very much – it was very much designed to – I don't want to say tell necessarily a full story in the first half and then launch a new story in the second half, but I definitely think people will see things, certain storylines being wrapped up here, and then clearly the suggestion of a storyline for season two. So in terms of where we're going to go, it's going to be wildly different. And I'm not going to, nor would I give away where it's going to go, but it's all mapped out, and it's going to be, have a distinctly sort of different vibe, than the first set of episodes.
Mm-hmm. When we spoke the last time and we talked about how the split season, seems to be able to help the focus of the narrative, and it was actually pretty early on in the season.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you just were like right on the money with that, because it's really, this has been just so rich and layered and focused,
mm-hmm.
with each of the characters having the journey, just as you explained to me. And now we have David too, who's now tied to Rumple's fate, you know,
right.
how's he gonna live? Right. So, this is great. So will there be a cliffhanger at the end of episode 11? Or will it be, we're done and now we're going to go on?
Oh, no. There will be plenty. You will certainly be teased with something to come back to. There is no – it's not carefully cleaved where you just – things sort of fade out. We definitely give a hint of where things are going to be going in the second half.
Cool. So and I know you and I have done this a little bit when we've
yeah.
talked. But – how does the writing go? When you get an assignment? Do you get an assignment to write this episode, or do you pitch an idea to Adam and Eddie? How does that work?
No, I mean, it's much more a group effort at the very beginning, where we will be all together in a room, and you'll kind of have a sense. Usually the first thing is we kind of know whose episode it's going to be. And here in this instance, it was just we knew this was going to be Rumpel's episode, and we knew this is the episode that was going to reveal that Peter Pan was his dad. And similarly with episode 4 that I also co-wrote with Robbie Hull, one of our other writers, that also started. We knew it was going to be a Rumpel episode, and actually in that version, we also knew it was going to be about Pan. But we knew we weren't going to reveal the father of it there, and we were going to do sort of four episodes apart, 4 and 8, that were going to kind of tell this two-part story, and actually sort of in reverse order, showing the middle first and then the origin story second. And then, you know, everybody pitches on it, and the writing staff, usually some one or two people will be out writing a script, but everybody else will be in the writer's room pitching on the episode. And we'll get a pretty clear sense of what the episode is. We call it breaking the story, and we write it on a whiteboard, and every scene is there, and we have pitches on dialogue in the scene and kind of where the scene goes. And then the two writers who have been assigned to it, and that's something that Adam and Eddie will sort of tell us, you know, at any point during the breaking process, they'll pull me aside and say, you know, you're going to write this one, and you and Robbie are going to write it together. Which allows us to kind of focus on things and kind of be asking the right questions. Mm-hmm. Then the two of us will go off and write an outline together, and literally he'll write the first half and I'll write the second half, and then we'll give notes on one another's stuff and rewrite it. And then that's sort of how it goes for the script too, where we'll write different halves, and then we usually get in a room together, and all the writers work differently depending on he and I have written a number of scripts together, so we've gotten into the pattern of we'll do our separate stuff, and then we always try to take a day or two where we can sit in a room together and just go over it line by line and rewrite one another's stuff and pitch different lines and stuff like that, and it's worked pretty well.
Cool. So how far back did you plan on making Peter Pan Rumpel's father? What an interesting twist.
Oh, I mean, we have something that we call minicamp, which is in between seasons, we'll get together for a couple weeks, and we will – it's like at the end of season 2, we shot the last episode, everybody took a little bit of a break, and then we got together for 2 weeks, and we will just kind of spitball ideas for season 3, or, you know, the upcoming season. In this case, it was season 3. And I am trying to remember, but I want to say, obviously, we knew we were going to Neverland because at the end of season 2, everyone's going
right
there. We knew we were going to be going up against Peter Pan. And I think somebody had thrown out the idea at the end of season 2, and if not, it came up in minicam of somebody pitched that idea out. And it just, you know, it was too good an idea to not to stick.
It's brilliant.
but yeah, so we knew pretty early.
So that was, I have to say, my hat's off for keeping this such a complete secret.
Oh, thank you.
Everyone was shocked. I think I was shocked. and I usually see things coming on Once Upon a Time. Last year, I think I drove Jane crazy, or I think it was in season 1. I think I drove Jane Espenson crazy because I kind of like guessed early on a lot of stuff. I did not see this coming at all, not till the very end.
And, you know, we play, you know, you always play a game in terms of wanting to put the breadcrumbs out and wanting, you know, it not to be totally opaque so that people can't look back on and say that there weren't any clues, but you also don't want to tip it too far where, you know, the boards have already beaten you to the punch. So clearly, and you never know until it airs, we hit the right balance in this one in terms of putting out enough clues, but not too many.
Sure. I have to ask you about the casting and I know you're not necessarily involved in the casting, but the casting of Stephen Lord as Rumpel's dad was brilliant. It was
great. And I mean, in terms of the decision on that, I mean, we watched a bunch of tape, and obviously Adam and Eddie have the final say on that.
Sure.
But when we watched him, it was, you know, he was incredible. And he also, to be honest, I mean, I think he brought a very a really interesting, hard, cynical take to that character. That was not, I would say, was not explicitly in the script. It was a very specific take, and we saw it in dailies. And he was just so good, and you felt so terrible for this little kid, for little Rumpel. And it was a really interesting choice, and it's very interesting to see his performance in that scene, in the scene where Rumpel was being pulled away by the shadow, and then obviously in young Rumpel's point of view, he turns into Robbie Kay, into Peter Pan, and to see the tears in Robbie Kay's eyes,
right,
and all of the sort of emotion that that he was feeling, it was just so interesting to see that transition from literally one actor playing the part to another actor playing the part. And how their interpretations kind of butt up against one another right there. It's really sort of electric and kind of dynamic.
It is. But there was also in both performances, both Robbie Kay's and Stephen Lord's, that hardness.
Yes.
You know, there's a real hardness there, a real like obsidian hardness that doesn't exist in any of the other characters except maybe Cora.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, it certainly doesn't exist in Rumpel, who's,
no,
you know,
for sure,
a nominal
for sure
villain, but underneath, you know, he's not such a villain. And we
understand
he's like, you know. So, but yeah, I just thought that was great. And I can't, I would be remiss in not mentioning young Wyatt Olaf.
Yes.
Playing young, what great casting, too.
Yeah.
He really could be Robert Carlyle's younger self.
And obviously, I mean, you know, one of the challenges of an episode like this is it's wildly, wildly exciting.
Yeah.
And then you write it and then you say, oh, Lord, what if either one of them is no good? The act, you know, because, I mean, this is not, you know, usually we have, you know, our core characters, those actors that you know and love so well, kind of taking you through these flashback stories. And this is a flashback story that depends completely, except for Robbie Kay appearing at the end, depends on these guest actors, and both of them did such an amazing job, and the episode would be a disaster without such compelling performances.
Right, and Wyatt being able to, I don't believe he's Scottish, but trying to, you know, master that Scottish dialect, which is one of the most difficult dialects in the entire world. Master for an actor, and he really did a nice job for a young boy. I want to give my other panelists a chance to ask some questions, but I have a couple more questions before I open it up to them and to the audience. The term undoing is used a lot, right?
Yeah.
The boy is going to be his undoing, and undoing can mean more than one thing. And of course, Rumpel's point of view, undoing means his death.
Yes.
But undoing could mean the death of the Dark One. Could
for sure
not.
For sure. For sure. I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't say we wrote it knowing the ways in which that term could be could be interpreted and sort of embracing that. And embracing the way in which he clearly has a very clear sense of it, meaning his death. And obviously, I think from the audience's point of view, hoping it means, you know, something different than that, and something more potentially complicated and more interesting.
Yes, and so far it has. And I think this whole journey has been, in a way, an undoing of the Dark One, because where he has traveled from being the Dark One to this episode where he, you know, is like, my death be damned, I'm going to save my grandson.
Yes.
And what a journey that has been, because a year ago that would not have been Rumpel.
No, yeah, and it was nice, again, only because you and I discussed episode 4, it was really nice to be able to do sort of a sister scene to the scene in episode 4 where Neil doesn't trust his dad and he says, look, if you want me to trust you, give me the dagger. And Rumple says, I can't. And his son, in true attic form, thinks his father just, you know, can't give up his power. And
right.
we know that Rumple used it to cut his shadow off. And here in Episode 8, you know, the only reason that Rumple is able to walk through the protection spell is because
right.
he doesn't have his shadow. And Neil is able to go, oh, my God, you were telling me the truth.
right. So Henry at one point wanted to destroy magic. He doesn't want Regina to use it. He doesn't want his mom to use it. And now he wants to save magic. What caused this turnaround? I mean, what is Pan that convincing, or is he brainwashed the poor child?
I think it can be interpreted either. I think you can say it's a little of one and a little of the other. I think magic is a powerful thing. I think if you are to understand, you know, the journey that even Regina takes in terms of in previous seasons being the example to Henry of the kind of the evil magic can do, and now has seen his mother, whether it's in, you know, the season 2 finale where she sacrifices herself to try to, allow him to survive with a family that isn't her, and she's literally willing to give up her own life. I think that and other things maybe have informed a slightly more nuanced idea of that magic isn't just evil, and that it can be wonderful and that it can be used for good. And obviously, on Neverland, even going to that place, a place fueled by magic, has kind of – and a place that in theory kids visited in their dreams has given him a different perspective. And then obviously in the episode itself and in the episode beforehand, this kind of idea that Wendy's life may be in danger and she is perhaps
right.
just a proxy for other things that could happen if magic goes away, and that he wants to help this girl survive.
Right. Okay. Now, I have to ask you, this was a question that was tweeted to me. Several of these questions were tweeted to me.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
So this is not my question, although I have to say it's not a bad question. So the question is, and I'm reading this verbatim, did they try to make gold this sexy this season on purpose?
Did we try to make him this sexy? This season on purpose?
You know, she was particularly referring to his costume with the shirt that goes down halfway down
yeah.
his chest and the ruffles very dashing. He's very dashing.
I think we would do absolutely nothing to discourage people from being completely taken by him. I mean, listen. He's a good-looking guy with all that awful makeup on. So, I mean, what's going to happen when you take the Darkwing makeup off? I mean, you know.
Totally.
He
I met him at Comic-Con, and I interviewed him at Comic-Con. And it's like, yes, don't convince me.
he is magnetic. Magnetic.
Yes, he is totally magnetic. He can look at you and stare right through you.
Yep.
And it's, magnetic is the word. Okay, so I'm going to ask, Jimmy, do you have any questions? That you wanted to ask?
Sure. I guess I'm kind of, is this Neverland thing, are we going to see Neverland again after these next couple episodes, or once this is over, we're just going to move on and for basically, you know, go past what we spent all fall working on?
I think what I will say is that certainly in the next couple episodes, the storyline that we've been following with Henry and Neverland is going to come to, you know, a sort of a dramatic conclusion. I would never say never in terms of and especially when talking about Neverland, I guess. Never say never in terms of whether or not we will go back there. I mean, there are sometimes where by design we do it and also sometimes where I never thought we would do so many episodes just tapping back into Rumple's backstory, just being one example of how, you know, we sometimes find, oh, there are parts of these stories that we thought we had told, but we haven't told all of it.
Okay, cool. Any other questions, Jimmy, before I go to Chrissy?
One more.
Go for it.
With Emma, Emma's magic power has come in just little tiny bits that we've gotten over the last couple of years. Are there any plans anytime soon to really delve into the power Emma has and what it means, or is it still just going to be like droplets let off at a time.
I certainly think that the you know, she is going to, she's on kind of a life journey as opposed to sort of an episode journey in regards to that. And so for sure she is going to be struggling with that as we move forward, you know, episode to episode. But I guess that's what I would say to that. She's going to continue struggling, you know, with her magic as it defines who she is as Emma, as it defines who she is as a savior. And I think people will see, you know, in some of the upcoming episodes that is going to be a real struggle in terms of who is she, and what is her role as mother, what is her role as hero, and what is her role as you know, sort of purveyor of magic.
Do you think she's going to get sucked into? Oh, sorry. Do you think she's? You think, because you're one of the writers, will she get sucked into Regina's orbit? They seem to have a sort of uneasy confederation now, and Regina is teaching her magic. So is that a danger for her?
Oh, for sure. And I think, and I would also say maybe not only a danger. I mean, one of the really exciting things that these episodes in Neverland have granted us are, you know, seeing these characters who have had, who have been at sort of loggerheads with one another, seeing them be forced to get along.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the most interesting scenes that we've had and we'll have coming up particularly are about how sort of the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing how Emma and Regina can get along and how, you know, that is a helpful thing and how they can learn from one another in regards to that. It's been really nice to be able to play something other than them hating one another, which is also deliciously fun.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, Chrissy, do you have a couple questions?
I just had a question. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for talking to us.
Yeah, of course.
I wanted to know about the original shadow.
Yeah.
Are we going to know more about that? Because I suspect, I mean, I don't know. Okay, my theory has always been that the Blue Fairy, as it has got designs and is in control of pretty much everything that has been. Does she maybe have a connection, and what are we going to find out more about this other dark shadow and who that is?
I mean, I will say in terms of, I mean, it's obviously a big reveal that the sort of the shadow predates Pan. Who the shadow is, the shadow apparently is Marilyn Manson, who voiced the shadow.
Very nicely, too.
So maybe he was cutting a record before the island. We're not going to learn a whole lot more information about sort of the origins of, though again, I would never rule out the learning that in the future, though the shadow will play a huge role in the next few episodes coming up.
Okay, interesting.
Cool.
The other question I had was about the blue fairy. Is she the one that has been orchestrating? I mean, think about it. I mean, if you go back to what we know so far from episodes from seasons 1, 2, and now 3,
uh-huh.
I mean, she always seems to have her hand. She's in the background, so I always call her she's shady because people don't realize, and I have a feeling she's pulling a lot of strings. I mean, she led the Dark One to Rumple. She's the one that gave him the bean. I mean, like, am I on the right track with that?
I am not going to confirm or deny conspiracy theories that, you know, with the 50th anniversary of the JFK assassination sound,
right.
Listen, I would encourage you to spin away, but I'm not going to say – I'm not going to play a game of hot or cold with you about that.
Bummer. Oh, come on.
Well, we know that. We're trained to not play that game.
I'm not serious. But, no, I just think it's really interesting, you know, and she kind of flips in and out in the background. So whatever little thing she does, it's kind of like people forget about it. So
I just love that. For sure. And by the way, you will. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff coming up for the Blue Fairy fans out there. in the next coming episode, the next couple episodes. I'm not going to say that they're big mythological things that are going to tell you answers like that, but
right.
I think you'll be excited to see it.
Okay, thank you.
Can you give us any more teases?
Can I give you any more teases?
About things upcoming.
Barbara, I think we're on already.
I think you're going to see some really – well, look, they've been on Neverland for what? This is the 8th episode. I think the promise of them getting out and getting home is out there. I think the stuff you're going to see with in episode 9 about the origins of Henry, I think you're going to see an incredibly emotional – you know, emotional episode in regards to Regina and what she went through when she was trying to fill the hole left by killing her father to start the curse, and how Henry was a means to fill that. Yeah, that's what I would say.
Okay, well, that's great. We have a couple questions, and I know I said I would keep you for half an hour, so I'm going to just pull one or two questions, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no worries.
In the chat room.
Not at all.
Okay. So Samantha in the chat room says, I noticed Henry's heart had a golden glow. Is this because he is the truest believer?
Yes. I mean, that's the short answer. The longer answer is we certainly talked about in the room and in the visual effects meeting wanting his heart to have a slightly different look to it because it's special.
Okay. That's and I think that was very obviously noticeable. So cool. And Sarah Egan asks, are we going to find out more about the origin of Henry's storybook at all this season?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Good answer. Excellent. Excellent. My listeners have good questions all the time.
And by the way, that has been something that in the writer's room comes up so often. When are we gonna do more about that? Where are we gonna pay that off? And then you kind of just wait for the moment, and then you're like, this is the right time to do it, and the right time is coming in the next couple.
Excellent. Hey. Well, thank you for coming on. This was fun.
Hey, thank you for having me.
And would you come back and join us again after your next episode?
I sure would.
Excellent. Cool. Excellent. And this episode is actually a staff pick on Blog Talk Radio, so it will be all over the front page of Blog Talk Radio tomorrow. So
excellent.
Wonderful. Thank you so very much.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you.
Bye. Have
Thanks.
A nice evening. Bye.
You too. Have a good one, guys.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Yep, thanks.
So.
Oh, that was fun.
Was
great.
That fun? Is it was
yeah.
really
yeah, he's
a
fantastic.
Nice guy.
He really is.
Yes, very much. And he read my review.
That's so cool.
And so cool. Well, you know, when I was reviewing House every week, I was actually shocked. I did an interview with one of the writers. It was in season 7. It was the episode Bombshells. And it was like a hugely controversial episode. And I really liked it, and I defended the episode, but there were some things about it I didn't like. Well, I interviewed Liz Friedman, who was one of the two writers of the episode, the next day. So I got on the phone with her, and I said, yeah, I really liked the episode. She says, well, you really kind of trashed it in your review. And I was like, oh, my God, she read my review. And it was funny because, I mean, I knew that many of the House writers read my reviews, but it kind of didn't, like, hit home that they were actually, like, reading my stuff. So that was actually kind of neat to hear that from David. So, anyway, hey, guys. So was that was fun, and he'll be back after his next episode, which is a lot of fun. And he seemed to enjoy talking to you all, so and to all of us. So, Blue Fairy. Okay, so we're going to hear a little bit more about the Blue Fairy. Yay.
I'm so happy because you know that's my thing. Well, one of my things.
The more she pops up, the more Chris's theories are confirmed.
I know.
He's made me a convert.
I am going to – okay, so I – I am going to, you know, Taylor Karras is in the queue. So I'm going to, yes, will I let people call in tonight? Okay, Taylor, I'm going to, and I'm sorry I couldn't bring you on during my interview with David. We just have such a short time. So I will put you on.
Hey,
hello.
All.
How are you?
Fine.
So, Jimmy just dropped off because he goes to sleep. It's late for him. So
hi,
I'm sorry,
David.
David's gone. I could only have him on for half an hour, and I probably took up 25 minutes of the 30 with my own questions, so I didn't have much time to bring anyone on the air. But if you do, if you have a question for him, I can certainly email him.
Yes, I do. I do have a question.
What's your question? What would be your question?
And I've watched episodes such as The Price of Gold and Hatred, and I like what you did with Rumpelstiltskin and the Mad Hatter. Tell me, how do you manage to dead inside the characters and exploit their best potentials while fitting it within the confines of an episode?
Well, he's not on with us anymore, but I think I'm going to take the liberty of answering that as a fiction writer, because I'm a fiction writer. You live the character. When you're writing, you're in the head of the character, and the characters can surprise you. And they can go in ways that you don't necessarily expect them to go. But when you're living the character, you can't hate them.
I know.
And, you know, so when you're living that character, you're thinking in that character's shoes. And any professional writer would do that. So I don't mean to answer for David, but I will certainly ask him that.
Thank you.
That would be my guess as to what he would answer. But that's kind of a good writing question.
I know.
So what did you think of last night's episode, Mr. Karras?
And I haven't been watching WOUAT. I haven't been watching it. Sorry.
Okay. So I've been too busy
with Twitch.
Okay. That's cool. All right, I'm going to put you back in the queue because I'm going to see if Meredith wants, because I see Meredith is on the line.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Okay, no problem. Sarah, you're not going to call in tonight? So let's see. Meredith, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Well, actually, I still have a cold, but I'm all
right. Yeah, I know you. Sick. So how did you enjoy David on our show?
Oh, yeah, I think he's great. I bet he's a really great guy.
Yeah, he seems like a terrific guy. What did you think of last night's episode? I know you and I have had a couple of emails going back and forth today, and I think you really liked the episode. I just loved it. And you really strongly suggested, as I do, I totally agree that everybody should go back to the beginning of the season and watch Peter Pan's actions and words and everything, especially his scenes with Rumpel in context of last night's episode.
Yeah, the things he said, I mean, the way he rubs salt in open wounds, horrible. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
he definitely isn't, the fact that, you know, he's over 300 years old and still up to his old tricks, I hope that they don't make villains worse than him. I really don't.
Mm-hmm. So cool. I agree with you. So, all right, I'm going to put you back in the queue and take Sarah.
Okay.
Hang on. Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
So were you okay in the storm yesterday?
Oh yeah, I was able to. Yeah, luckily no power, no water affected the house, so everything's good.
Good.
It's just a 20-minute news coverage delaying.
Yeah.
Basically cutting off. I was so mad. I was having a very long work day, and I just wanted to go home. watched one time and then do my homework, and it was 20 minutes late. I was so
25 minutes late.
I don't know. I lost track. I just knew that as soon as it returned on, I'm like, it's Bay and Wendy. What? No, when they're all together in the camp, I'm like, no,
yeah.
I gotta go online and go to my source and
figure
that all out.
I started tweeting WLS TV, and I was like, come on, guys. Come on.
Yeah, I think I saw some of them.
So, yeah. Oh, interesting. So, Angela says, Rumpel's father is far worse than him. Oh, my gosh. I loved, by the way, and I said it to David, I absolutely adored that final scene between Rumpel and Peter Pan. You know, this whole...
That was epic, actually. That was.
I am not anything like you. He completely rejected his father.
Star Wars right there.
Join
me, Luke. Together we could rule the galaxy as father and son kind of thing right there. Then there was someone else said another line from Star Wars, and it just, I think it's like, I'm nothing like you or something like that. And it was like, Star Wars, they're hitting all of my favorites, like pop culture references, Indiana Jones, Star Wars. Now we just need Back to the Future somewhere in this.
See, I just don't see Rumpel as Luke Skywalker. He's Han Solo.
Yeah, I know.
He's Han.
But I know, I forgot to ask David, hey man, can you tell the wardrobe, just keep him in that outfit back in Storybrooke, because, oh my God, I don't want him to go back to the suit, because he looks so great.
Oh my lord!
Hear that all the time, please.
I bet that's really uncomfortable.
He's never been in any other clothing. Rook has never been in any other clothing.
His outfit, his costume, Hook's costume looks a lot more comfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, Rumpel's costume looks really stiff and uncomfortable.
I think it's mostly the jacket for me that would be uncomfortable, because it's got such a high neckline, you know? I mean, I'm thinking it's probably soft leather that he's wearing, but oh my God, I just want him to be in that outfit all the time. I don't know, it's going to be weird to see him in Storybrooke with a suit on. It's just going to be weird. I just love him so much the way he looks now.
So Matt Cartelli says, Rumpel said, Peter Pan destroyed my father, to Neil. Obi-Wan told Luke, Darth Vader destroyed your father. Ooh,
good.
Yeah.
That was it. I'm like, there's another one somewhere.
That's great. I love that. That's so true. Yeah, see, I think, I don't know. I mean, I like to think Rumpel is a little bit, well, I guess he could be either or, really. He's sort of the sorceress. He's sort of the what do you call it? The
Emperor?
The Emperor in some ways.
Yeah, yeah,
because
for
he's
sure.
the Dark One, right? So,
yeah.
So he's the Emperor, but then he's also a little bit of
there's a certain background. And because
what
he went through, there's a lot of Luke Skywalker, and there's a lot of the victim. I mean, you know, you can really understand Rumpel not wanting to, he's been a victim all his life.
Right.
And now finally he doesn't have to be a victim again.
Exactly.
So, I really think,
what David said about how, you know, when that transfer was made, or the transformation between the father and then you see Robbie as Peter Pan, and his eyes were watery, you know. I mean, it was just, it was just such an incredible performance.
And
the way that they did that, the way it was
acted, and it's interesting because you see him kind of flying over the land, and you think he's looking for Rumple.
Right.
And then he finds the cave, and he completely gets distracted with that, and he stops.
Very interesting.
Which shows he really doesn't care. Fundamentally, this is a very selfish, selfish man.
Yeah, definitely.
And even though, you know, everything that Rumple has done has been for family, you know?
That's true. And that's what's interesting, too, because, you know, that's one of the things with Rumple is, before he was the Dark One, I mean, he had pride and he revered Neela so much and his son so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wasn't going to allow himself to be the unfeeling bastard that his father was.
And it also puts into context, too, why Rumple injured himself in the Ogre War.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, everything that he has done as the Dark One point has always been for his family. You know, getting back to his family, getting back to Bay, you know, saving Henry now. Whatever he's got to do, he's going to do. And do you think for a second that if his father was the Dark One, can you imagine him as the Dark One? Oh, my God.
He would have been horrible.
I mean, there would have been nothing. Because ultimately, Rumple, even though he's the Dark One and all this, he still has a good heart underneath it all. I mean, it's a curse.
And
that's the difference. And I think that if his father were to become the Dark One, you know, you never know. They could end up doing that twist. Because think about it. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that, Rumple is able to come out of the Pandora's box without being the Dark One. Dark One is still in there. They put Pan in there.
Yeah.
And then what if down the line he is released at some point and he has absorbed being the Dark One, because then you've got everybody against one major villain, and they could do that. Who knows? I don't know.
I mean, Angela says that Pan seems to be as powerful as the Dark One. I agree.
Yeah.
I think Pan is already very powerful.
Yeah. So can you imagine if he would amped it? It would be amped up tenfold if he. You know,
Samantha Leah says, I didn't feel like Robbie was crying tears of sadness. I just felt like it was all the emotion of the transformation couldn't be contained. You know, it was like finally I am what I want to be. I'm a child.
Yeah,
again.
That could be too.
That could be too. Because he didn't seem terribly concerned about
he wasn't sympathetic or anything. Like, you know, like he didn't see, like he was not really sorry for giving up his son to the shadow. I mean, which is really interesting.
And in fact, it's interesting because Rumple says to Pan, "What have you just brought me here so that you could taunt me?"
Right. Exactly.
You know, such a cruel. And I think one of the things that and you know, Rumple, I think, is still. In the series, when he's come across real genuine cruelty, I think he's been astonished by it. When Cora pulled out her own heart,
yeah,
he
that's
was actually
true.
Astonished by
well, the look on his face was like, my God, what the hell?
what did you do? You know, why would anyone do that? And I think when he has seen that cruelty and when he has seen other cruelty, I think his reaction has been the same. You know, and don't forget, when he became the Dark One, he stopped the Ogre War. He brought the children home.
That's right. He did. I mean, do you think that his father, as the Dark One, would have done that? Hell no. He wouldn't have cared. I mean, and that's why I'm saying, yes, he's done these horrible things as the Dark One, but it comes from a different place. He's not inherently evil is the difference.
I think his father is a real bastard, they say, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. I want to spend some time, and I could go on about last night's episode forever. It was really, really good. I've actually watched it now twice, which actually for this for Once Upon a Time is actually fairly rare for me to watch an episode more than once. But this one I watched three times. Yeah, definitely up there. Would love to see a commentary track with David and Robert and Robbie Kay.
And Robbie Kay, that would be great.
That'd be cool.
That would be amazing. I think we need to start a campaign to get them to do that. Start a writing campaign.
By the way, speaking of a writing campaign, I tweeted Robbie Kay earlier and told him he should be on my show.
Well, if you get him, since they don't like, I don't know what, I'm not worthy enough, apparently.
Oh.
Even though I've spoken to him before, I'm sure he would do it. It's just a matter of, that's okay. If we can talk to him here, that'd be fine. I mean, whatever.
I will try.
I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy.
I do have some good guests coming up, by the way. I have next Monday, I have on, I have to get back to my calendar, January, Jackie Holland. Do you know who she is?
No. Who is that?
Who is Jackie Holland? That's your assignment.
Oh, no. I have assignment. Okay.
Ha. Jackie,
I think I remember you asking us last time.
I did, and you did not respond. So she's been in How I Met Your Mother.
Okay.
I actually did look her up. Yeah, she's in there.
Right. She's been in Desperate Housewives, and she's actually involved in a brand new couple of independent movies. So one called Teeth and Blood and one called War of the Dragon. So we're going to have her on next week for a short interview. And she's a comedian and she's a writer and she's an actress. And so she is going to be on my show next week. And also coming up in – official contact. Thank you for giving me that press information, Matt Cartelli. I appreciate that. What was I going to say? Coming up in January, I am going to be having Dean Haglund on the show.
I can't wait for that. That's exciting.
Yeah. Oh, he's so much fun. I interviewed him for I think we were on the phone for an hour and a half last December. We had a ball. It was great. It was a great interview, and you should look it up on Blog Critics because it's on Blog Critics. And then in December, I think December 23rd, my guest will be the curator of the Museum of Broadcast Communication. Which is right here in Chicago. It's a fabulous, fabulous place. Wally Pedrazik. And we are going to be talking about the history of science fiction television.
Cool. That
should
be exciting.
Yeah, that should be so much fun. So I am very excited about that. And so I want to mention a couple of things. Wow, is Sleepy Hollow getting good? And I didn't see tonight's episode.
God.
I did not watch tonight's episode, and I am really looking forward to watching it.
I have an hour and a half for the West Coast.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it as soon as I'm off the air.
I was just on Twitter, okay, while you guys, while this was going on, I've been looking at all the tweets, and basically some of the writers and producers have been tweeting. So for the West Coasters out there, it looks like Orlando Jones, Elizabeth Chitra, Mark Goffman will be tweeting with the West Coast. So anyway, everybody was talking like crazy, but I know. I'm so excited. Well, you guessed on my you guessed it on my show last week. Well, of course, I didn't have a voice then, but
I did. I did. That was fun. I enjoyed
fun.
That. I could hear you. I could hear you.
Sleepy Hollow Addicts. It's awesome.
Yes, you should tune in for that.
Yeah, it's fun. It's just fun because it's such a crazy. It's like a roller coaster ride, you know? And I love that it's steeped in a lot of the history. And, yeah, I mean, they're tweaking it to whatever they want to do. But I mean, last week's episode, for me, was just the best one so far. But the fun part of it was, you know, the craziness. He thinks we're crazy for paying for bottled water. He's like,
I know.
Oh, my
lots
God, and the computer.
Yes.
Anyway, it's a blast to watch. I mean, I'm loving it.
It's
my new favorite.
It's a great show, and right before it comes Almost Human.
Yes.
Which
what did
is,
you see? Did you see last night?
I did. I saw the pilot a couple weeks ago. I'd seen it when it was in its
really
rough cut, and then I saw it in its final cut last week. And I really liked it a lot. I thought that it was it's certainly one of the most promising Fox shows that's on, and I love the 1-2 punch of both shows. It's sort of like Monday night is going to be Sci-Fi Night on on Fox.
On Fox, and two. Also, I wanted to let people know, I don't know if everybody knows, The Following returns in January, so I'm excited about that. That's another one of my favorite shows with Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What did you think of Revolution?
Oh, my gosh. It is getting better and better every week.
I know.
It was great. And, you know, it's funny because I almost, like, knocked Kevin Bacon over last year at Comic-Con.
You're kidding.
I tripped on him. He was sitting and I was walking in, and I can't remember, I was going in to do an interview, and it was right at the end of the interviews he was doing for his show. And it wasn't this year's Comic-Con, it was last year's Comic-Con. And I tripped on his chair, and I was like, I almost fell into his lap. It was very embarrassing. But I'm really excited about going to Comic-Con this year again. I'm looking forward to Hannibal coming back, hopefully in January. And I'm hoping to sit down with either Mads Mikkelsen or Hugh Dancy, who are the stars of the show, and sitting down and speaking with them before that goes back on the air, whenever that's going to be. We are getting close to the premiere of Downton Abbey.
See, and I haven't seen that now. People are like,
you
can see it, and I haven't watched it yet.
Okay, so you have to start. You will be addicted. This is what happens.
Okay.
You will get addicted. So what you need to do is and make sure that when you get it, get the British version and not the Masterpiece Theater version. The British version, the Masterpiece Theater version, thinks that we're all idiots and can't figure out the laws of British inheritance. So there, it's cut. So definitely get the British version, the BBC version. I don't know if it's on BBC. Maybe it's on ITV, but get the British version. Hannibal, yes, Downton Abbey is great. Hannibal, February for Hannibal, maybe. Yeah, I've been talking. Katie said maybe February. I've actually been talking to NBC's PR people in charge of Hannibal, and I will let you know as soon as I know something definitive. When I spoke the last time to them, they weren't 100% sure. So lots to watch. There's another show coming on called Intelligence. Yes. Connie says, so don't watch it on PBS? Well, watch it on PBS when it comes on, you know, in January, because we won't be able to watch it before it comes out. So I don't know if we'll have access to the British version, but watch it on PBS and then watch it again. It's great. It's fun. It's not especially deep. but it is an awful lot of fun, and I have a favorite character on it. So you're going to have to guess who my favorite character is, Chrissy. That's your assignment.
Okay, I got my assignment.
He doesn't actually become my favorite character until season 3. So anyway, we are out of time. So thank you, everyone, and a special thank you to David Goodman, who's co-executive producer of Once Upon a Time, for joining us tonight. So thank you, and I will catch
you
next week. Have a good week.
All right.
Have a good week,
bye,
Sarah.
You too.
Okay, bye.
Have a good one. Good night.